Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, today we're wrapping up Oscar on Mars, our special series exploring the art of filmmaking through one movie, Ridley Scott's The Martian.
I gotta figure out a way to grow 3 years' worth of food here on a planet where nothing grows. Luckily, I'm a botanist. Mars will come to fear my botany powers.
The Martian picked up 7 Oscar nominations, including Best Actor for Matt Damon, as you just heard, and Best Picture. And over the course of this week, we talked with folks in the Boston film industry about why The Martian was also nominated in some of the nuts and bolts categories, such as Best Visual Effects, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Best Sound Mixing and Editing.
It's hard to do a planet like Mars, that one that we've now all seen pictures of. Mm-hmm. It's not like they got to make anything up. It had to look like the planet Mars we've seen now from the rover pictures and things like that, but they also had to make it very cinematic.
You know, you can't go to NASA and record a rattling spacecraft, but you can kind of get an idea of what it should sound like. So a sound designer might take a bunch of kitchen implements and put that in a room and kind of rattle it to get the sound.
So he made the science very precise, which is such a high for people who adore science. And yet, for people who are not science nerds, you'd read this and you'd start glazing over,
yeah,
because some of those explanations go on and on and on. The adaptation made the effort forward-moving. We got the information without stopping the drama.
So on that last thought, The Martian is science fiction, but how close is it to science fact? Well, joining us now to do some fact-checking on The Martian is, I love my job, I'm going to say this out loud, this is such a great moment, is an actual astronaut, or former astronaut, if I may, Jeffrey Hoffman. He flew on 5 shuttle missions between 1978 and 1997, and he's now a professor of aerospace engineering at MIT. Jeffrey Hoffman, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great to be here.
Also with us is Michael Hecht. He's associate director for research at MIT's Haystack Observatory. And together, he and Jeffrey Hoffman are the principal investigators of the MOXIE instrument that will fly on the Mars 2020 mission. Professor Hecht, it's great to have you back on the show as well.
Great to be here, Magda.
I truly love my job. This is so great. All right, so let me first ask you, if there were an Oscar for most scientifically accurate film, would The Martian be in the running?
I'd say it was pretty good, not perfect. I'd give it a B on a rating scale. They did a really good job in most things. There were a few things, for instance, when we heard in the clip he was going to grow potatoes on Mars.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that the soil of Mars has a lot of what we call perchlorates in it, which are pretty nasty chemicals. It is possible to leach it out with large amounts of water, but he didn't have that available. They just didn't make a big deal of that. Radiation is a big problem. And here, actually, Andy Weir, who wrote the book, he sort of invented a what we call in the business, unobtainium. It's a special type of radiation protective material that was included in his spacesuit, so they didn't have to worry about that. And then finally, I mean, there were a lot of little things, but that scene at the end where Matt Damon pokes a hole in his glove so that he can propel himself over.
Hold that thought, actually,
okay.
Jeff Hoffman, because we have that scene here queued up. Now,
well, I have to say, that was bogus. So I'll just say that before you play the
spoiler,
scene.
Spoiler, it's bogus.
Just so that people know what's coming.
All right, so this is a scene where Matt Damon, who plays Mark Watney, he's in orbit in the Mars Ascent Vehicle, but too low.
Close, but not close enough.
So he can't reach the Hermes spaceship, and this is his solution. So let's listen.
I could find something sharp in here and poke a hole in the glove of my EVA suit.
I could
use the escaping air as a thruster
and fly it towards you. It would be easy to control because it'd be on my arm.
I can't see you have any control if you did that. You'd be eyeballing the intercept using a thrust vector you can barely control.
Yes, those are all very good points. But consider this. I'd get to fly around like Iron Man.
Wouldn't he also
Commander?
Be dead?
Let's go Iron Man.
Oh, let's go
Iron
Man.
That's a very cool concept. On the very first U.S. spacewalk, Ed White had a little reaction control gun, which he held in his hand to try to control himself.
But that was like a separate thruster that he held in his hand.
But he had a lot more control than Matt Damon would have had with a hole in his glove, and it was totally out of control. So, as I say, bogus. But it's a movie, as you say. Yeah. You know, it's a movie.
Let me ask Professor Hecht here a question, because Jeff Hoffman mentioned perchlorate, which you and I have talked about before, and how that helped us discover water on Mars, or help you guys discover water on Mars, I should say. But get us back to this point. This is like a major plot point in the movie that, you know, Matt Damon or Mark Watney is a botanist. He's going to grow food to help him survive on Mars. The way they, I mean, show it in the film, is there any aspect of it that's close to scientifically accurate?
Well, I think most of it is actually remarkably close. I'm not sure I even agree with Jeff in terms of the reaction to the Iron Man scene, only for a different reason.
Oh, okay.
Not because it's not correct. It isn't correct. But I love it when a film finds a way to slip in a little bit of education. And if they just got across the idea of action and reaction in space, you know, that's a good thing. And, you know, they simplified it a little bit to make it not physical. I would say the same thing with growing plants. Jade, basically, yes, you certainly could grow plants on Mars more or less the way he talks about it. Would it be edible? There are some toxicity issues. You know, in my mind, I'll let that sort of thing slip in the cause of artistic license. I'll tell you what I wouldn't, though, what I wouldn't let slip. The only part of the film, and it wasn't so much the book that bothered me, you know, Mars is my second favorite planet. It's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful, stark desert landscape with, you know, puffy blue clouds and a pink sky. And it's familiar, yet it's foreign. And it's hostile in many ways. But one thing you can't accuse it of is having a hostile weather. It has gentle breezes that may of a very wispy atmosphere, gentle breezes that can lift dust to great heights, but wouldn't knock over a lawn chair.
Really? And, I mean, a giant storm is what's the premise of the entire film.
And actually, NASA, I've spoken with some friends at NASA who collaborated with and tried to help out the Martian to make it as accurately as possible. And they tried to come up with alternate scenarios that would force the evacuation from the surface of Mars. Unfortunately, none of them turned out to be as cinematographically impressive as the dust storm, and so the movie stayed with the dust storm. But as we say, it's a movie, right? And the idea is there are many things which could lead to having to do a sudden evacuation, and you know, they just had something which looked good on film.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you. So a very interesting point about the weather, because that's not one that I had even thought of. I like the idea of gentle breezes on Mars. But what about the entire premise of a Mars mission? And, you know, because he says, as we heard at the beginning of the conversation, that in order for him to be rescued, it would take years for a rescue crew to get to him. I mean, given the technology that we have and what we're planning to have for some kind of future Mars mission, how long would it take to get from, I guess, Earth, and if we made a pit stop at the moon before Mars, how long would that be?
Well, the problem is it takes about 8 or 9 months to get from the Earth to Mars. And Earth and Mars are only aligned for this kind of transportation every 26 months. So they were basically planning their exploration voyages. You know, Ares 4 was going to be 26 months after Ares 3. And that was already, they already had the equipment on the surface that was going to take the Ares 4 crew back. I mean, that's one of the critical points, is we're not going to send everybody together. We're going to send the surface equipment to, you know, 26 months earlier so that it's there and ready for the people. And so to send equipment back to the Ares 3 site where Mark Watney was waiting, that's another 26 months over and above that. So, yeah, that's why he was talking about 4 or 5 years before anybody could come and get him.
I see. Go ahead.
Now, if I can, the other piece of this that was very realistic is the technology that enabled Mark Watney, Matt Damon, to survive to begin with was the ability to take Martian carbon dioxide and turn it into oxygen, whether it was for breathing or for inflating his habitat or for burning the fuel that would get that MAV off the surface. That technology is very similar to the technology that Jeff and I have been developing for the Mars 2020 mission, and how lucky we are to have Matt Damon as a spokesman for our experiment. Who can claim that?
So, I mean, as I actually was just watching The Martian last night with my wife, and when they had that great scene of Matt Damon getting into the rocket and taking off from the surface of Mars with all that propellant. I mean, there's tens of tons of propellant you need there. You can't send all of that from Earth. So you actually send the takeoff vehicle essentially empty, and then you fill it up essentially with what I called the great-great-grandson of the MOXIE experiment, which is what Mike and I are working on now, basically making oxygen out of local Mars resources.
So you guys bring up a point which leads me to one last clip that I want to play from the movie. And it's about sort of not just in terms of scientific facts, but sort of the spirit of science that is in this film, because it seems like so much science fiction is all about science going wrong, right? Like dystopian scientific futures. But in The Martian, I feel like there's a lot of scenes or subtext here where, you know, the astronauts are basically saying how much they love the idea of exploration, how much they want to further and love science. And in fact, there's even a scene where Mark Watney, Matt Damon again, asks his commander to tell his parents about his journey, of course, if something happens to him. And he says something really moving, and here's what he says.
Tell them I love what I do. And I'm really good at it. I'm dying for something big and beautiful. And greater than me. Tell them I said I can live with that.
So, I mean, was that meaningful to you?
Oh, very, very deeply. I mean, you know, as an astronaut, I had to deal with that. I mean, you're strapping yourself on top of 4.5 million pounds of high explosives
that you
every
can't
time
turn
you're
off.
Ready to go into space. But when we were getting up ready on my fourth mission to go and rescue the Hubble Space Telescope, which was probably the most significant of all my missions, you know, the realization that this is worth the risk. This is something that's important to do. It's going to make a big difference to science, to people all over the world. And as it turned out, it did. I mean, the Hubble Telescope has been NASA's greatest scientific success. So I very much resonate with what Matt Damon said there.
Yeah. Professor Hecht, last thought goes to you. I mean, hopefully one day we will not have a mission that ends the way Matt Damon's did, but that we will have people on Mars.
We will, and I think neither Jeff nor I will certainly not be active in our careers when that happens, but we like to think we're taking a small step in that direction.
Well, Michael Hecht is the Associate Director for Research Management at MIT's Haystack Observatory. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for giving us the airtime.
And Jeffrey Hoffman, former astronaut and professor of aerospace engineering at MIT. Great to talk with you as well.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, listeners, listen back to our Oscar on Mars series at radioboston.org and have a wonderful weekend. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.